genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. That's area code 805-639-0008. And you'll want to keep that number handy because we have two giveaways today. One in each half hour. We'll be giving away a free sandwich or a free salad from Urbane Cafe at their new location in Oxnard, the corner of Gonzales and Rose Avenues there. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is good and bad. We're going to be looking at subjects that can be either good or bad. My first guest is a business school professor who's done extensive research on what makes a good boss and a bad boss. We'll explore the differences between the two. My second guest looks at the good and the bad of the baby boom generation and discusses why he thinks we're headed towards an Armageddon for our generation. If you're either good or bad, naughty or nice, you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, 639-0008. Robert Sutton is a professor of management science and engineering in the Stanford Engineering School. He's the co-director of the Center for Work, Technology, and Organization. He co-founded the Stanford Technology Ventures Program. He's also an IDEO fellow and professor of organizational behavior by courtesy, and we'll find out what that means, at Stanford Graduate School of Business. He's received his PhD in organizational psychology from the University of Michigan's Go Wolverines, and he has served on the Stanford faculty since 1983. He also taught at the Haas School at UC Berkeley before that. His book is titled Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Rest. Welcome to the show, Bob. How are you today?
How are you doing, Bill?
Well, I am doing terrific today and so honored to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being our guest.
It's great to be here.
Well, I want to get into the beginning of this. I'm fascinated by your background, Bob. You teach managerial science and engineering. That's queuing theory, critical path, PERT method, all of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Besides finance, that's probably the most analytical of the business sciences. How in the world did you become interested in what some would call the soft science of people management?
Well, I guess that the dirty little secret is that my department, management, science, and engineering, has all sorts of math whizzes like that. And I'm an organizational psychologist who snuck in the back door, I guess. And they made the mistake of giving me tenure, and now they're stuck with me.
And now they can't get rid of you, huh?
but you know, a little bit more seriously, that about 35% of people who get degrees from Stanford get them from the engineering school, and almost all of them go into management eventually, and certainly all of them have bosses. So teaching leadership to people who are engineers is very important because they have such a big impact. You just look at the people who populate everything from Facebook to Google to Pixar and on. They all end up having to deal with bosses or being bosses. So it's a big topic, and leadership is an important thing.
All right, that makes perfect sense now that you've explained it. Now, the central thesis of your book, Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Rest, the central thesis is this, that the best bosses find ways to be in tune with the people that they lead. They understand what it feels like to work for themselves. Now, that's an interesting feat. First of all, what does it take to understand what it's like to work for you?
Well, the first thing is you got to not be so egotistical and self-absorbed that you actually sort of look up and realize that there are people working for you. It sounds funny, but the degree to which we've got evidence that when you put people in power, they turn into selfish jerks who break the rules is just unbelievable. It's something where you can replicate it in the in the lab, and you can look at every sex scandal that keeps rolling down, everything from preachers to Mark Hurd. I mean, it just goes on and on, that you put people in power and they turn into jerks. So, if you want to avoid that, I mean, one of the first things to do is to have mentors, to have peers who can pull you aside and tell you when you're not listening and being a jerk. I think that's one of the most important things. Another thing is to actually learn how to listen. John Wooden, one of the heroes in Southern California. I mean, he had this sort of great quote that essentially said is that the best bosses and best managers really listen, and people can tell when you're faking it, because when somebody's not really paying attention, it's a mess. And then another thing, which I've gotten more and more fascinated with in my old age, is when you look at really bosses who are really great at being creative, they're fabulous at sort of like fomenting constructive conflict. So I guess that's just sort of like a short list, but that last one, that skill of being able to fight with people, the way I described it, is to be able to create a situation where people fight as if they're right and listen as if they're wrong. It's a very high level of the art of being a boss, of management skill. But when you look at the people who really lead fantastic creative teams, they can do that.
All right. Now, that's interesting. I love that phrase. Fight like you're right, listen like you're wrong.
Right.
How very creative. I
and
like
hard
that.
To do.
Yeah. Well, all right. So you've got to be, definitely you've got to be able to fight for what you believe in, and you got to listen to foment that creativity that you're talking about. But really, how many leaders? I've been a manager. Let me just give you my own experience. I've been a manager, and you're right. There are all kinds of pressures that come down to bear on you. And all of a sudden, you find yourself drifting into that self-absorbed area. How do you pull yourself back out of that? Okay, peers and mentors, that's one way. But how else can you just do a self-reality check?
Well, I think the self-reality check, I mean, for starters, is to start like looking at where your attention's going. So are you thinking about yourself constantly, or are you looking at the people around you and sort of focusing on the reactions? That's sort of a good thing. And then to me, another thing is to sort of start listening to what people are saying to you. If they're saying yes, you're right all the time. I mean, I just had a slide up for a talk I'm working on. Joe Cassano, who was head of the unit at AIG that lost $45 billion. Michael Lewis has done a brilliant job of ripping him apart if you're listeners wanted to hear about him.
The money game, yes.
What an all-star jerk. And there's a great quote from one of his underlings, which was that the way you started every conversation with Joe was to say, "You're right, Joe." And it's like, if people are telling you're right all the time and everywhere you go, they're kissing, we're on the radio, I can't say the word, but they're kissing that thing constantly and heavily. That, to me, those are some signs that they're afraid of you, and the best way to get ahead is to flatter you. And, you know, of course, we all know that there's actually a pretty cool body of research on flattery that mm-hmm. shows that even when people flatter us falsely, we tend to like them more, even when we know it. So, you know, just in my own life, I got a close colleague and friend, Rod Kramer, at the Stanford Business School. Whenever he sees me, he tells me I've lost weight. Well, I usually haven't lost weight, but it makes me like Rod more, even though, you know, I know he's bullshitting me.
We're talking to Bob Sutton, everybody, author of the book Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Worst. And I got to admit, this whole thing about flattery, the yes, sir, you're right, that whole thing, the body of evidence is overwhelming. In fact, we had a colleague of yours, Jeffrey Pfeiffer, on the show, and we were talking about just that people, they've done research that shows no matter how many times you say you've lost weight, you look great, you know, we cannot get too tired of hearing that about ourselves. So it's hard to pull ourselves out of that downward spiral. So give us some of the secret sauce. How do you do that?
I've already mentioned listening, and the other thing is to be aware that when people give you bad news, there's this thing called the mum effect, that we automatically and mindlessly dislike people who give us bad news, even if it has nothing to do with what they did. So you got to sort of check your mind at the door. And I would go back to the constructive conflict. And I've already talked about this, but sort of my hero here is a guy named Brad Bird. Brad is the Academy Award-winning director of The Incredibles, Ratatouille, and I've interviewed him, and I was just at Pixar about 2 weeks ago giving a talk. And so I put up the slide, and I had this slide that said, you know, Brad was describing how one of the teams he was leading, he told them, everybody will be humiliated and encouraged together. And I said to them, so, you know, it's one thing for me to say this somewhere else, but some of you have worked with him. What was it like? And a guy named John Walker, who has been his producer in a couple movies, came up to me and said, essentially that working with Brad was like being in loving conflict the entire time. And for those, for your listeners who have the incredible DVDs, there's a great extra sort of snippet there where John Walker and Brad Bird, they're sitting there, they're fighting. And what John Walker said, he's like the money budget guy. He's like, it's my job to get you across the finish line, Brad. And Brad says, it's my job to get you across the finish line first. And that tension, which can be very destructive in the wrong hands, where people fight over money versus schedule and quality, but in a healthy relationship is really quite excellent. And in that, I mean, there might have been a little bit of teasing, but you could really see in that relationship, and John Walker really emphasized this, that there was like no kissing up and false flattery. There was like, you know, when something was bad, you called it bad because the collective goal of the team was quality, not kissing up and making everybody feel absolutely wonderful, especially the boss every second.
All right. Well, I don't want to leave this, Bob, because this is an important subject, this conflict, because you said it in your own discussion there that in the right hands, this can be very, very invigorating, very energizing moving forward. Too often, however, we see this used improperly, that you get people who conflict over budget, over direction, and all you need to do is take a look at the movie studios or television as an example of that. But the point is this, that it forms camps a company, doesn't it? You side with one guy or the other, and now all of a sudden you've got a fractured organization.
And as you say, that's almost the default condition in many organizations that it happens. But it is interesting. In fact, I was just reading an article in the New York Times, I think yesterday, that, you know, down near where you are in Los Angeles, that the new head of Disney Studios, he's going in and actually firing people who don't cooperate, and promoting people who foment cooperation and sort of breaking it across the silos. So it can be done, and actually Disney's an interesting place. They have a long-standing history of having a lot, you mentioned the movie business, lots of dysfunctional conflict between all different units. But the new head of Disney Studios, it sounds like he's doing things right and holding people accountable. And when they end up building their own fiefdom, they suffer for it. And that's the way it's got to be, because once you're in an organization where the way you get ahead is by stomping on people and acting like a selfish superstar, and those are the people get rewarded, then everything unravels. And you certainly can see that in sports too. I mean, that's sort of the classic case where when people are sort of like fighting for their own individual sort of reputation and don't care about the team, they cause trouble. It's the reason Terrell Owens has been traded so many times. He's sort of been involved in the sort of unraveling the every team he's ever been involved in, starting with the San Francisco 49ers. I got rid of him because he was a jerk.
Yeah, we're talking to Bob Sutton, everybody. I agree with you, Bob. He's the author of the book Good Boss, Bad Boss. We're having absolutely a fascinating discussion. Bob, we're going to break for some commercials here. However, when we come back, I want you to think about this. We do something on the show that I call Quick Fire. When we get back from our commercial break, we'll do our Quick Fire today, where I give you the name of a CEO. You tell me Good Boss or Bad Boss. Give me your reasons why. Don't answer any of these now, but we'll answer those when we come back after this short break.
And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme. Today's theme is good and bad. My first guest, Bob Sutton, we're talking about Good Boss, Bad Boss. We'll get back to him in just a second to play what I call the quick fire. Before we do, though, I gave out the telephone number, 639-0008, 639-0008. We've got a giveaway from Urbane Cafe. This is a free salad or a free sandwich at their new location in Oxnard, the corner of Gonzales and Rose. It is a beautiful new location. If you haven't been down there to see the build-out, you owe it to yourself. Win this coupon, and you can go there, get a free sandwich or a free salad from Urbane Cafe. And I'm going to give that away to the second caller at 639-0008, 639-0008, for a free salad or a free sandwich from Urbane Cafe. It's getting to be lunchtime. It's a good time to win one of these coupons as well. Bob, back to you. Now, I love your book, Good Boss, Bad Boss. It is how to be the best and learn from the worst, which is good. So let's just do that. Let's talk about Good Boss, Bad Boss here. Sure. I'm going to give you the names of some people, and you're going to tell me whether they're a good boss or bad boss and why, based on the criterion in your book. All right?
Sure.
The first one you've already mentioned in passing, but he's so topical, top of the news right now. It's Mark Hurd of Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah, so I think he's a good boss who turned bad. And and so we'll see what happens when he's at Oracle. But if you sort of trace what happened, he came there and he did this really quite impressive sort of cost cutting, and was kind of known as rough on the edges. But you can sort of see that right before he got involved in this, you know, we don't know exactly what happened, but it involved money and sex, which is sort of the usual scandal.
Right.
It's the classic thing that when somebody is so lauded that they sort of lose touch with reality, and they just think that they're the most fantastic person on earth. And one of the findings with this power poisoning stuff is that there's this idea of disinhibition and lack of ability to control your impulses, and you just think you can grab whatever you want and nobody's going to stop you. And it is interesting that right before that happened, they were on the verge of offering him a multi-year, $100 million contract, not to mention piles of stock. And I think that is sort of a classic case. And he might be the kind of guy, actually, that being brought down a notch might not be so bad for him.
All right. Well, we're going to have to see. I'm very interested in how things are going to play out there with over at Oracle with Ellison, because those two guys in the same room, I'm not sure how they're both of them will fit their heads through the door.
Although I think that we were in the room with Larry. He's always the man, no matter who you are.
So, there you go.
So it might actually be good for Marker to defer to somebody like Larry Ellison a little bit, actually.
We will have to see. All right. Now, this is a two-part question coming up, because it actually is a kind of a before and an after. It is a two-part question. Huh? Steve Jobs at Apple in his early years.
Yeah, so Jobs is an interesting case, and I certainly think that he's one of the most, or perhaps even the most brilliant CEO, and you know, in terms of creating really pressure for creativity. He's always been absolutely brilliant about that. It's very clear. I once was at a talk that was given by Arthur Rock, who is the primary venture capitalist and was on the board that both funded and then fired Jobs, that he sort of just reached a point where he's out of control, and talk about fomenting dysfunctional conflict was just like, unfortunately, had a lot of problems. But you got to remember, the guy was like 27 or 28 when he got fired,
and
I think that going through all the stuff that he's gone through, you know, having actually a long period of lack of success with Next, and it took a long time to get Pixar going. And, you know, doing things like having kids and having cancer can get your head right. And so I think he's made sort of an interesting journey. And it certainly, he is capable of being an overbearing jerk still in some ways. There's some evidence of that. But he's really toned down his act a lot and gotten to be a much more sort of like civilized, giving person by all accounts. And like I say, it's not exactly he's like kind and gentle. But I think he's made more personal progress on that front than Larry Ellison, for example, though they do admire each other a lot.
All right. Well, I can see that. Now, so is it fair to say or surmise from what you just said that Steve Jobs in his current form is a kinder, gentler, closer to good boss on that? But is he as creative as he once was? Is he as creative as he was during the Macintosh years?
Well, so it is interesting, because the question of whether or not he personally is as creative as he is actually kind of an irrelevant question. He might be less creative than he was. His skill has always been marketing. I mean, you go back to the early days, he had Steve Wozniak, who was really doing much of the technical work, but his brilliance is in understanding how users do stuff. And then in his old age now, really, and this is one of the main points of good boss, bad boss, especially for CEOs, like their ability to influence a huge organization like Apple is, even somebody like for Steve Jobs, is kind of limited in some ways because they can't touch everything. But really where the power comes from, the team that they have around them. And if you look at Apple's board and you look at the top management team, they are just an absolutely fantastic group. So Jonathan Ivey, who is the sort of design guy, has done a fantastic job with making things user-friendly and beautiful. And certainly Jobs is involved in that. And then there's a guy who you hear less about named Tim Cook, who is their he was acting CEO and Jobs was out ill, but he is the master of logistics and supply chain. And that's one thing that people don't talk about very much with Apple, but they really are great at is bringing on new products, ramping up and making literally millions of them very quickly, and then turning down the knob on the production of the old ones as they phase them out. They're just masterful at it.
Well, they weren't always that way. A big shout-out to Tim Cook, who was the CEO of Intuit before he came over to Apple as well, and he has done a masterful job of turning that around. Speaking of shout-outs, big shout-out to our sandwich winner, Cynthia. Cynthia, you've won a coupon for either a free sandwich or a free salad from Urbane Cafe at their new location in Oxnard. The street address is 1750 East Gonzales Road. That's the intersection of Gonzales and Rose Avenue, as well. And just so that you know, Bob, Cynthia adds that she's a good boss. So we want
to
get that.
I'm glad to hear.
We want to get that on there. All right. So back to bosses. This one's a little bit more challenging for you. President Barack Obama.
Yeah, so Barack is interesting. To full disclosure, I voted for Obama and gave him money, and obviously that's a very difficult job to do. And I guess I have sort of two takes on it. One is, and I remember right when he got the job, Bill Clinton, an interesting case in himself, went on CNN and talked to Larry. What's the name? How can I forget his name?
Larry King,
the famous Larry King. And the point that he made was that no matter what happens, nobody can teach you how to do that job. Nothing can prepare you for it.
Right.
And expect him to make some mistakes his first couple of years. And I think that was right. And I think everybody who's been president sort of reports that. So hopefully his learning curve is going up. And the other thing, it's interesting that you got Rahm Emanuel sort of going, and there's a shakeup in his sort of immediate team. And
of the others.
And I'm not sure he surrounded himself with the best team, and hopefully he'll be able to assemble and improve the team a little bit. But boy, you know, he's had a more rocky initial sort of taking on the job than I initially expected. On the other hand, it's a very hard job to do. And, regardless of whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you can see, Bush had some of those same problems. One of the things that, I am not a George Bush fan, but I do have to give him credit. He sort of figured out at the end, the last 3 years or so, is to not listen to Dick Cheney. And there's a lot of evidence that he just basically stopped talking to him and felt sort of screwed by Dick Cheney. So it takes a while to figure out how to do those jobs, and hopefully he'll crank up the learning curve, because it's not an easy thing to do.
All right, we're talking to Bob Sutton, everybody, author of the book Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Rest. We're doing the quick fire, and here's one, just passed away recently, George Steinbrenner.
Yeah, George Steinbrenner. So, I was just in New York and doing the book promotion stuff, and they sort of are like pretending that he was like a great guy. And everybody who ever dealt with George Steinbrenner, I mean, the guy is like clearly was a complete jerk, and it's one of those things that I think is sort of does not provide a good role model. So by my model, if you're a jerk and a winner, you're still a jerk. And Joe Torre, what Joe Torre's great skill was, and I talk about this some in the book, and it's very well documented. And I mean, he wrote this absolutely fabulous book, The Yankee Years. Like half of his job was distracting and buffering his players from George Steinbrenner's obnoxiousness, and even he is sort of like, sort of reconstructing history as if George Steinbrenner was like a nice guy. And, frankly, in that market with the amount of money he spent and the quality of the players he got, you would expect him to win sort of no matter what. And so I'm not a Steinbrenner fan. I'm a huge Joe Torre fan. I think he did a great job under very difficult conditions.
And we'll see what happens to Joe after this season as well. We're talking to Bob Sutton, everybody. Last one in the quick fire, Jack Welch.
Yeah, Jack is sort of interesting, isn't he? So Jack, a little bit too rough on the edges in some ways, and certainly a tough guy. But the thing I really, Jack Welch did many things well strategically. The stuff he did good, I especially like at General Electric, is he instituted a system where a superstar employee was defined as somebody who helps others succeed, not just being a selfish jerk. And he was, like, he'd do public executions and fire people who violated this. He was very tough about it. So I think that's what he did well. What people say he did not do quite so well was to sort of set up his own succession. He made that a little bit too much of a messy process.
But overall,
I think interesting guy and certainly entertaining, which is always important.
Now, how can you say that? Let me just call you to task on this a little bit, please, because here's Jack Welch, who said the bottom 10% of his company every year will be cut and out the door. Now, how is that empathizing with people who work for you? I don't quite get that.
So first of all, I don't necessarily agree with that system. In fact, Jeff Pfeffer and I have documented in some of the stuff that we've done that overall that probably doesn't work. But when you talk to people in the General Electric system, and it's not like I like that system, but the whole thing is integrated and the whole thing sort of works, and everybody understands what the deal is. Now, that specific thing I actually don't agree with, and under Amelt, the new CEO, he's sort of softened that a little bit. And, in fact, speaking to my colleague Jeff Pfeffer, he argues, just think if you had a plant that was making cars and you had a 10% defect rate a year, I think that probably was not a good part of the system. But overall, I think there are other parts of the system that are good. But I agree with you that, even if you look at the best bosses and best system, there's parts that disturb you. And if you talk to people at General Electric, they'll talk about how tough it is sometimes when everybody's doing a good job and you're supposed to, you got 10 people in your work group and you've gotten rid of everybody who's bad and you're supposed to fire one of them. So I agree with you that that was a defective thing, and under a melt they have softened that some.
Good. We're talking to Bob Sutton, everybody, author of the book Good Boss, Bad Boss. We're down to just about a minute left. And you, speaking of Jeff, when Jeffrey was on the show, we talked about power. And he said that women don't embrace power. You notice in the quick fire, there were no women there on purpose. Does gender play a part whether a boss is a good boss or a bad boss? In other words, are men or women more likely to be a good boss?
Well, you know, certainly there's plenty of discrimination against women. I mean, it's very well documented. But the evidence about female bosses is, sort of the big news is there's probably not that much difference between men and women in terms of the actual quality of how they act when they're bosses. But where the evidence gets kind of scary is that it turns out that women are held to higher and tighter standards. So to be viewed as just as good a boss as a man, for a woman, you've got to do an even better job. And it's sad but true. I mean, in fact, we were going to call the book Top Dog on a Tightrope, and my wife, who is actually a female boss, when I told her that, she said, well, we get the tightrope, you guys get the balance beam, because you can screw up a lot more than we can, and there's a lot of evidence that she's absolutely right.
Ah, that's great. Bob, I can't believe we're out of time. Thank you so much for being our guest. We've been talking to Bob Sutton, author of the book Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Worst. Engaging, fun. I'll have you back at some point in the future, Bob. Just enjoyed it thoroughly. Thanks so much.
You're great to talk to. I love your questions.
All right. We'll talk to you soon down the road.
Bye-bye.
Take care.